The theme for the retreat that Matthew and I are using for our talks is that of freedom. And freedom is one of the, you know, primary characteristics of Buddhism. It kind of, what gave birth to Buddhism was the Buddha's own freedom. And it's the main reason he taught was to point to freedom, to highlight freedom, to make freedom alive for us all. So something we could taste and feel and sense and step into. So much so that Buddhism is sometimes called the Vimutti Magga. And that's a Pali term that can be translated into English a number of ways depending on the preposition that's used. In Pali, there are no prepositions. So I kind of delight in the different meanings of this, possible meanings of this expression. Vimutti means liberation, freedom, release. Some people have translated as deliverance and emancipation in English, but generally I like to call it release, but freedom, liberation. And magga is usually translated into English as path. And so it becomes the path related to freedom. So it can be the path to freedom. It can be the path of freedom, in that this is a path that manifests or highlights or reveals or expresses freedom all along the way, from being a beginner all the way to the end. And also I think of it as the path that arises from freedom. So it doesn't quite work to say the path from freedom as if we're trying to escape it, but that arises from it, how we live our lives with this reference point of freedom. And maybe if you use the word freedom some over and over again, maybe it loses some of its value and importance or seems kind of abstract. Synonyms for this in the early tradition would be a profound peace. Probably in the earliest periods, the primary positive characteristics of freedom is happiness and peace. And I like the word ease a lot. Maybe I see ease as a hybrid of happiness and peace. And so it's a path of ease, a path to ease, with ease, that grows out of ease. And so to discover that ease, discover the freedom, to discover that peace, is one of the great milestones of Buddhist practice. So I want to tell you two part stories. The first is a quite classic story, and then there's a second part that there were these two monks who were traveling on foot, and they were going to visit some great monastery with a great teacher there. And they came to a river. The water was fairly high, and there was a woman there who wasn't able to ford the river alone, and she was kind of stuck. She needed to get to the other side. And so the first monk just went ahead and crossed the river, and leaving the other monk and the woman behind. And the second monk then went and to help the woman, picked her up, and carried her across to the other side. On the other side, he put her down. And the two monks continued walking, this time in silence for many hours. And just before they came to the monastery for the night, the second one couldn't contain himself anymore, and he burst out with a lot of pressure. How could you who are a monk, who made a vow not to touch any woman at all, how could you have picked up that woman to carry her across the river? You broke your vow. And the second monk said in reply, I put the woman down back at the river. Why are you still carrying her? So maybe the second monk, when he lifted the woman over the river, maybe he broke his vow somehow. And that's a whole other question, kind of discussion. But the idea that he did it with freedom and put her down and he left her behind. The monk who was resentful or upset, he was carrying something with him for hours, built up pressure. He was not free. He was caught somehow in having picked up and holding on to his resentment or his sense of outrage or righteousness or I don't know what it was, but he continued. The monk who picked up the woman was free in a sense, did what he needed to be done, maybe even free of his rules. The second one was stuck, maybe stuck because of the rules. So they spent the night in the monastery, and as they were leaving, the teacher of the monastery saw that they were very sincere and wanted to give them a present and to each of them. And the present was a very rare, very important Buddhist book that was said to be really contain some of the real essence of Buddhism and a very effective way to really help people discover what freedom was. And it really kept the keys to this path. And it was a rare book, difficult to find, and the teacher had two copies. The book was quite big. It was a very big, heavy book. And so the teacher was going to offer this to the two monks. And the first monk took the book. The second one said, no, thank you. And I think I know everything the book has to teach. And so off they went on their way, and they had a long hike to go and up over a mountain, and it was a very hot day. And as they went, the one carrying the book found the book to be intolerably heavy. In fact, after a while, it became a real burden, and going up the steep mountain, it seemed impossible to make it up anymore. And he couldn't really go back. He was in the wilderness. He couldn't go forward. He was this heavy, heavy book. And the other monk who didn't have the book, he just went up the mountain just fine. He didn't have this heavy weight he was carrying. Finally, the first one put the book down and left it on a rock because it was impossible to continue into the wilderness and where they had to go with this weight. And when they came to the top of the mountain, the other monk was waiting for him there. So the first monk said, wow, how come you were able to walk up the mountain so easily and I wasn't? So the second one said, oh, it's because you picked up something heavy. I knew better. I knew that it wasn't going to work to carry this heavy book on this trip we were going to go. And I knew that what the book was going to teach me was don't pick up anything extra. Don't carry anything extra. If it's extra, put it down. So this idea that to learn how to not pick up anything that's not needed, the idea of being able to put down anything that's not needed. And if it's needed, then to learn how to hold it in an open hand. And this metaphor of holding something in an open hand, I think, is quite profound, because with a hand open, if you're holding a bird and the hand is open, the bird will fly away. If you hold it tight, you might hurt the bird or even kill it. But so if you hold your hand, I knew there was a woman who lived next to IRC when we bought it, and she would feed the birds, and she would put out her hand, and the birds would land on her hand and peck at her little seeds she had, and then the birds would fly away. To have your hand open to support what wants to be supported and to give freedom to whatever needs to fly away, to go. And this is kind of counterintuitive for many of us, because the idea is we have to hold on tight to what's important for us and what we cling to and what we want. Or we have to close ourselves off from what we don't want. But the Dharma way, the path of freedom, is to find out how to walk through life with an open hand. A hand that can support what needs support, and a hand that allows things to go that are no longer needed, or things that are ready to move on, or ready to be free. It's not dismissing anything, or it's not dropping anything. You know, sometimes this idea of letting go as an expression of freedom is not quite right, because we can let go of things and drop them and break them as we let go of them. And some things shouldn't be let go of. But to hold it with an open hand, lightly, so that it's free to go when it's time for it to go. And it's free to stay as long as it's appropriate to stay. In the warmth, softness of our open palm, we can hold all the things that need to be picked up and let them leave all the things that are ready to leave. This would be a way of living in freedom. To live with the fist closed, either because we don't want anything to get into that fist, into the palm, keeping things away, or because we've clutching something so tight that we're not going to let it go away, the hand is not free. The hand, in that case, is stuck, is caught, it's suffering, we say in Buddhism. So to discover this way, this path of a heart that is open to allow things to come and go, but has the openness to offer support and care and love to what is needed, to has room to hold what is needed, but is not holding anything from the bird from flying away, or our friends to go when they're ready to go, and not holding on to them. This is freedom. So to discover this on the path of freedom, I'm fond of the idea that the primary meaning of the word magga in Pali language is not path, but the primary meaning is road. And I think of a road as being really wide, and I think of a path as being really narrow. I think of a path generally to be something that's just wide enough for one person to walk. And but the idea that the it's a road to freedom, it's a highway to freedom, it's a vast and wide, the space of freedom. Sometimes this path to freedom is called the middle way, the middle path, or the middle road. And said to be the middle road between sensual indulgence and self, not denial exactly, but self harming. And usually it's called asceticism. But the literal meaning is something like self-affliction or self-harming. And the middle road between that, and I've always been perplexed about how is this, what does it mean to be the middle between these two extremes of sensual indulgence and self-harming, asceticism? And is it supposed to be the place where there's equal amounts of each of them right in the middle? Or are you supposed to have one foot like seesaws that kids play on, where you know one side on each, one foot on each side, so a little bit of each? You know, what does it mean to be in the middle? It turns out that the Pali word for middle also means in between. It can also mean an interval or a space or a gap. And so the middle way is that gap, that space that's between things, that opens up the way without any obstacles. The path of freedom, the road to freedom, is an open space without obstacles. That's how a road works. If a road through the jungle is a clearing where nothing blocks our path to go forward. And so to learn to walk the path to freedom is to discover what these obstacles are, discover how we close the fist of our hearts, how we resist and push things away, how we create obstacles and hindrances for the heart's ability to be at ease, for the heart's ability to be happy and to be at peace. And so we want to discover where that is, because what we're doing in Buddhist practice is we're making the road as we practice. There's not some kind of road to liberation outside of ourselves. You won't find the road to liberation at IMC, at IRC. You won't find it in Bodh Gaya, where the Buddha was enlightened. The only place you will find it is in your own heart, in your own practice. And in a sense, we practice to clear the road, to make the road free of obstacles, so the heart can have that openness and freedom to move freely forward. And the way to do that is to become wise and understanding about the obstacles. Rather than focusing too much on freedom and too much on getting past the obstacles to freedom, the Buddha made a strong emphasis that a wise person is someone who is wise about the obstacles, someone who's really wise about how we cling, how we resist, how we pick things up and hold on to them and never put them down. Someone who becomes wise about what we're doing that gives birth to suffering. And, you know, some ways that's not what people want to do. They would rather have freedom quickly and easily and not have to do the work to experience that. And it's possible sometimes to have accidental freedom. It's possible to have conditions come together and feel like there's no obstacles here and I can just be free and do what I want, and that wonderful feeling of being uninhibited. But the problem is kind of like, if you're in the jungle, lost in the jungle, and trying to find your way out of the wilderness, and somehow by accident you stumble out of the wilderness to safety, but you didn't learn how, you didn't learn the path out of the jungle, then if you ever get lost again, you're going to be just as lost. And maybe then you won't be so lucky to accidentally stumble your way out. But if you're paying careful attention about how you're finding your way out of the wilderness, then if it happens again, then maybe you can find your way out. You understand the landmarks and what's needed. So by really taking time, slow time in this practice, to develop the meditation, develop the practice, and begin looking and being willing to look at how you pick things up and hold on to them. What are you caught by? What are you preoccupied with? What are you afraid of? What are you really greedy for and really want more than anything? What are you resisting? What are you not willing to look at and close down around? To really understand those things. And this is where, ideally, this vimutti magga, this path related to liberation, is a path with liberation. That we make the path with a sense of freedom. And this is what I mean by this, that of course we're going to have obstacles. Of course we're going to run into places where we cling and get attached. Of course we're going to get stuck and preoccupied, get afraid and resist. But the path with freedom learns to look at these challenges and hold them in the open palm of the heart, the open palm of awareness. We can learn in this path of mindfulness how to bring attention, awareness to anything at all, but not make that thing a problem. Just make it one more thing that we hold in the soft, warm palms of our hand, the hand of awareness. We're not afraid of it. We're not pushing it away. We're not trying to fix it. We're not trying to, we don't judge ourselves by it. We don't criticize ourselves. We don't get angry at it. The phenomenal practice of mindfulness is to, you know, sometimes mindfulness is defined as non-reactive awareness. I think that's just another way of saying awareness with freedom. To let the awareness freely, openly hold and be aware of the very challenges we have in our life. This is a phenomenal skill to develop. It's not easy. And on the first day of the retreat, I'm sure many of you have found it not easy to be with the first day challenges. It's kind of inevitable that many people on the first day of a retreat will be more tired than they ever expected they could be, or their body will hurt more than they ever expected it could be, or their mind is more unruly than they ever thought it would be on retreat. You know, the mind is spinning and caught up in its concern, and you can hardly stay present. Some people are surprised to find headaches on the first day, or all kinds of things that might happen. And partly it's this huge transition we're making, that the whole psychophysical system has to adjust this whole different way of being. And some of it is that when we finally stop from the daily rush and doing of things, we encounter what we've been running from or what we've been not really paying attention to, and the whole system begins to equilibrate, and that process of coming to harmony sometimes goes through a period of needing to sleep, being tired, aching, a variety of things that goes on. So these can be considered obstacles and difficulties. A common kind of expression, idea that some people have is, if only this wasn't happening, then I could practice. If only I wasn't, my body wasn't hurting so much, then I could practice mindfulness. If only I didn't have a headache, then I could practice. If only my mind wasn't so busy, then I could practice. But the path with freedom is a path that steps towards all this and holds it as if it has permission to be there, holds it with awareness, supportively, maybe even lovingly, but with a hand open, so when it's ready, it can go. And kind of to continue this hand metaphor, if a hand is in a really, you know, if you're with someone, then the hand is really tight and clenched, they're really angry and they're beside themselves with the anger, and maybe you've seen some people who's clenching their fists when they're doing that. And they don't even know they're doing it. But if you come with your supportive hand and come underneath and just support that fist that they're having, inevitably, just feeling that support, or you're holding the weight of their fisted hand, the chances are that that fist will begin to open and relax. So to come with the soft, warm hand of mindfulness, to hold what is difficult, to hold the challenges, then we are making the path to freedom. In a sense, the challenges are no longer obstacles. They're just difficult and uncomfortable and somehow challenges, but we find our freedom, we offer our freedom, a way of being free and not reactive to whatever is going on, the path with freedom. And then, and as we go along, we start getting a sooner or later, we get a sense of what this path of freedom is. We get a sense of the ease, the sense of being uninhibited, the sense of being unconstrained, that there's freedom. Now I can breathe easily. Now there's a breath of fresh air. Now there's an openness here. But the way there, as I've said, you know, is often understanding the obstacles, and I want to then use this to make another point about the obstacles. If you have free rein to act on every impulse you have, say that mostly what you want is to acquire things, the more things you can have, more shopping you can do, the happier you'll be. And you just, and then you can, someone gives you a credit card with unlimited funds in it, and you can't believe your good luck, and you can just spend every waking hour just on the web, shopping, just clicking away, just getting more and more stuff. And you don't have to worry about it filling your house too much, because this credit card allows you to just buy a bigger house, and just more space to have more stuff. And you tell your friends, I have so much freedom, I can buy whatever I want. This is not freedom in Buddhism. In fact, in Buddhist understanding, it's bondage. Because then, if it's compulsively just buying and buying and buying, then the compulsion is a form of bondage, where we're not really free. And we discover that we're not free if the credit card is taken away, and the habit, the impulse, and the compulsion to shop is now reaches a dead end. Like, oh, I click, you know, buy, and nothing works. And then it's so frustrating, and we try harder, and we click the card, or what's wrong here? I want more. And it's by not getting what we want that that compulsion to buy is seen. When we sit and meditate on retreat or any meditation, or doing walking meditation where there's a constant walking back and forth, the constancy of sitting still, the constancy of walking back and forth, is meant to partly to be not just a way of becoming calm or concentrated or mindful, it's also a kind of a reference point to discover where we are not free. And at first, someone new to meditation, who's never, you know, someone who's lived a very busy, agitated life, and they sit down to meditate, and there are people who sit down and told to sit down, not move, and just be with their breathing, and it's impossible for them not to move. They're so jittery, so active, so moving, every impulse to move, they feel compelled to act on. Maybe part of the reason there's so much agitation is that there's all these unresolved emotions that they're constantly trying to get away from. And so there's no real freedom. Or say that you sit and meditate, and the next thing you know, you're meditating just fine. And the next thing you know, you're busy cleaning the refrigerator. To act compulsively, impulsively, is not where freedom is found. But if the commitment to sit still in meditation is strong, then the impulse to move, the impulse to clean the refrigerator, will arise, but we get to see it with great clarity. If the impulse is to avoid something, to pull back from something, but the commitment is to sit still, we might notice the even physically how we pull away and pull back from the experience. Or maybe in the mind, you feel the mind closing down, and it doesn't want to stay on the breathing. So I think of the sitting still in meditation as kind of a middle way or a middle reference point that helps us to see all the ways in which we leave the center, leave the freedom, leave the stillness of the middle way or the open way in between. As we start getting deeper and deeper into meditation, then we see it in the body, we start seeing it in the mind. So if you're staying focused on your breathing, the constancy of your breathing, you might find that it's not so easy to stay with the breath. What you're seeing, if the mind drifts off, is you're seeing how you're actually not that free. You're not free enough to rest and be peacefully present on the breathing, because something inside of you has a strong energy to think about things, to think about what it wants, what it doesn't want, what it's hoping for, what it's hoping not to happen. There's a lot of compulsion in thinking, and we get to start seeing the movements of being for and against, of closing up, or of picking up, or trying to throw away. But simply holding that constancy with the breathing can help highlight how much of that movement we're doing, and we start seeing where we're not free. The solution is not then to hold yourself frozenly still and hold the mind kind of frozenly attentive, like gripping onto the breath. The way forward is to really, again, as I said earlier, is to take your time. Have in-between time. Have a sacred time to hold and be present for all these movements, compulsive movements of the mind, all the ways we pick things up, all the things that we, don't put them down, we get stuck in them. Hold them in the soft, warm palms of your hand, the hand of awareness, and look at them and get to know them. And perhaps, almost certainly, if a lot of these ways that we're caught and not free are just the equivalent of a fist that, if it feels supported, will relax and open up and come to peace. All the ways that we're attached and we cling, inherent in the clinging, in the attachment, in the anger, in the blame, resentment, in the greed, in the lust, in the neediness, in the anxiety, inherent in them all is the potential, a possibility of release, of loosening up, of opening up, just like the fist that opens up when it's supported. And how can you bring a supportive awareness to whatever is happening so that you're supporting everything to find its way to its potential for freedom? So, I once had to read a very big book by a very wise, great Chinese Buddhist teacher from the 6th century. And luckily it was, in small print and fine, thin paper, but it was a big book. And this was supposed to be a great teacher who could studied all of Buddhism up to that point, 1,000 years of Buddhism, and had summarized it all in this big, great treatise, this book. So I was reading that book, and then I came across, halfway through the book, I came across a line that, oh, this is what the book is all about. this is all I needed to know from this book. And the line was, is, liberation beckons us from within everything. Liberation welcomes us, calls on us from within everything. The idea that in everything is found a request or an invitation to find the freedom that's there. In the midst of all the ways that you feel you discover you're not free, don't lose heart by how often you get caught and how often you pick things up. But you learn that how to be free with those things, awareness can hold them and be supportive of them, then they can move towards freedom. Freedom evolves or unfolds or resolves itself, unwinds. We can really trust the simplicity of mindfulness, the simplicity of an open hand. So we sit on retreat, not only to become calmer, more centered, more concentrated. Those things certainly happen and they're useful, but please don't make that the primary thing you're doing. Have that be the support cast for what's really important. We allow ourselves to become calm. We allow ourselves to relax and settle in and have some continuity and concentration in the present moment as the support for learning the art, the skill of holding all the ways we're not free, to hold it with an open hand so that freedom can find us, so that the way that everything has freedom within it can be released, that freedom can be released, that freedom can be opened up. And the image we have in Buddhism is that of a jewel, the jewel in the lotus. As the lotus opens, there's a jewel there. And that jewel is our freedom, the liberated mind. And maybe everything is a lotus if we hold it and allow it to unfold. And everything can become free if we offer our freedom to it, the freedom of awareness, the freedom of attention. So the path to freedom, the path of freedom, the path with freedom, that freedom is part and parcel of this whole path of Dharma, the whole path of retreat that we're on. And I'll end by saying that I'm confident that every single one of you has had some taste of freedom, the freedom that the Buddha is talking about. And I can say that with confidence because this freedom the Buddha is talking about is not so mystical or so, it's not supernatural, it's not some radical otherworldly kind of experience. In its essence, it's quite ordinary. But because it's so uncommon, it might seem extraordinary. But there's probably, if you look at the ordinary life you're living, maybe even now during the retreat, I can venture, if you pay attention, you'll discover there are some places where you're free, where you find that open space, the open highway, where there's no obstacles. And I'll give you maybe some examples before I end this talk, that maybe are evocative and suggestive of something. When you exhale, the inhale is no longer there. The absence of the inhale allows the exhale. The absence of the exhale allows the inhale. The absence of one gives freedom for the other one to be there. It's possible, with a little bit of kind of care, to be aware that as you exhale, you've now become free of the inhale. There's an absence there. There's an open highway there for the exhale. As you walk, maybe one foot steps forward when the other foot is, you know, rooted firmly on the ground. The one that's on the ground gives the freedom to the other one to move the step forward. When there's silence, there's an absence of noise that gives freedom for the next sound to arise. The way that sound travels through the air is used in Buddhism as a metaphor for a mind that is free. So I don't know if those little examples have any meaning for you, but still the idea I'm trying to convey is that there's a lot of small freedoms throughout the day that we don't really notice because we're so busy with the mind going on to the next thing, going on to the next thing. In a few minutes, you're going to be free of this Dharma talk, and it'll allow you to do the next things that you do. And maybe it'll be, you're happy to have it over, but there is a kind of freedom. When you come back to meditate next time, it's the absence of what you're doing before that allows you to sit down. Maybe you can start looking and trying to feel your way in. Where are the small, very ordinary ways in which I do things freely? It's possible to feel freedom when you're brushing your teeth. And it's possible to notice that there is no freedom brushing your teeth because you're trying to brush your teeth quickly to get it over with to go on to the important things in life. Or it's possible to notice how you're so concerned about some cosmetic aspect of your teeth that you are really making it into a huge project. And there's not much freedom. But simply brushing your teeth, no hurry, no lingering, not making anything special of it, just brushing your teeth. You might have a taste of freedom. And whatever taste that you have, let it register. Take it in, so that when you come to meet an obstacle, you have some visceral kind of a reference point for what it feels like to maybe hold that obstacle in an awareness that's free, with a heart that can be open and supportive. So thank you, and I'll free you from this talk, and thank you for this day of practice together, and It's something I really value and appreciate, and every single one of you in retreat has done great. And you have my tremendous appreciation for doing this. Thank you. And then thank you all who are on Zoom. I hope that that worked okay to basically, you know, giving the audience, I wasn't really talking to you this time, I'm looking at you here on this computer, but I hope that was fine to come along and support it for you and in your practice and your life in this time of day, and that it's relevant enough to come along and hear a retreat talk this way. And so we'll do this again on Wednesday and Friday. And Matthew, it's a little hard. It's hard to get him on Zoom because on YouTube. So and we won't do it for him. But his talks will be recorded, and they'll be available either directly in Audio Dharma if you look up his name, or if you look up the under retreats on Audio Dharma, you can probably find this under the date. You'll probably find this retreat and. You get Matthew's, and then you can get the series and how we're building this in the course of the days. So wonderful to that you could come along, and I appreciate it, and thank you all.